It's the Hoffman Show, hour number two of 2.5 today. Yes, 2.5 is it's college basketball season as of right now. College basketball is actually happening. Men's and women's games all across the U.S. right now. And Maryland's playing tonight, and we got coverage for you here on the Team 980. I'm actually live at Capital One Arena, where the Warriors will be in town to take on the Wizards tonight. That game is at 7 on Bloomberg 99.1. Right now, it is time to talk more Commanders, though, and it's time to do it with our pal Michael Phillips during today's Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Miguel, ¿cómo estás, señor?
I am literally staring at the Siegel Center, where in 2 hours, VCU will start its season against Bellarmine on 910 The Fan. That's available free on the Odyssey app, Craig, if you're keeping score.
I'm always keeping score, Michael. I am always keeping score. And, you know, the score of the Odyssey app is that it's always free, and there's always sports there. So, you know, if you're not already listening to us right now on it, now would be a good time to go hit the download button. Bosses, that's got to be at least $5 of a bonus for both me and Michael. At least $5. That's all I'm asking. $5.
But, buddy, there's 7-2. We got easier bonus money. We don't even have to do that.
That's a good point. That is a good point. But we did it anyway, so give us $5. Okay, Michael, the way I described the Commanders' win yesterday off the top of the show was it was businesslike. They were never really stressed. They answered every moderately difficult question asked of them. How would you describe their performance yesterday against New York?
That's nice. I went with a hard hat victory. You know, this wasn't the best performance they've had all season. This wasn't one that's going to get them on, you know, all the highlight reels or national attention or, you know, the awards and all those things. This was just, they played a team that wasn't as good as they were, and they beat that team. And they were told how the game was going to go by the Giants when they ran the ball over and over and over out of the gate. And they responded to that with their own time of possession drives and doing enough to make sure that they could be in a winning position. And it's just, I went big picture so much on my show today, not because the game was boring. I mean, it was a little bit boring, but just because how refreshing is it to have a coaching staff that you just fully trust to handle that situation, not freak out in that situation, take care of business in that situation?
Yeah, that was one of the points I made as well during our first and 10 segment was that between the just general professionalism and then, man, you want to talk about not just like, hey, they do it right, but you want the contrast. Oh, my God. What is Brian Daboll doing? And what is the defensive coordinator doing? Not having his guys ready for the end of half. And then obviously Daboll, the timeouts, not using them ahead of the 2-minute warning, letting Cliff Kingsbury just, hey, free pass play, buddy. You want to use it? Sure do. To see not only Washington handle their business, but to see, to be reminded, if you will, Michael, because we've seen plenty of it over the years, how bad it can be when that stuff isn't detailed up. Like, I think that's a great point.
It's not a given that coaches are going to know how to handle the clock. And boy, Brian Daboll didn't down the stretch there. And that was one of the key differences in this game. And that produced, you know, a turning point moment in the game, and all of a sudden, you know, things are very different than it had been if they had just handled their business correctly. Yeah, it's wild to me because the Giants, I mean, you know, Daboll comes in that first year, they look good. You say, okay, maybe the coach is holding them back. Now year three, okay, maybe the coach is holding them back. You know, Daniel Jones is certainly holding them back, but I don't think he's the only one. I also don't understand, Craig, why the Giants fans keep defending Daniel Jones. I'm not saying he's the problem. I'm just saying he's definitely not the solution.
Yeah, I don't get this. I don't know. Maybe we're talking to different Giants fans. Every Giants fan I know knows Daniel Jones is not very good and knows that they made a huge mistake in giving him $40 million a year. Although they kind of, I don't know, they were in between a rock and a hard place. But the problem is, like, that's the worst place you can be. You either need to run into the rock or the hard place. Rock or hard place, safer than in the middle of the two in the NFL, because now they're stuck in purgatory. Now who would want to go there? It's a mess. Although I think the big question in New York is, like, you know, you need a reset now. I think everybody knows, like, the next iteration is coming. And I even saw a couple articles today saying that Daniel Jones is probably the next Russell Wilson and other quarterbacks who have been benched so that they don't hit injury guarantees. Like, we can't afford to get this guy hurt and have to pay him again next year. We want to be able to cut him, so he's just going to get benched. But the question is, I think, there, like, do you – let Dable and Joe Shane pick the next guy or set the path forward. And I think that's the problem if you're Dable right now, is you're not actually as good as you are schematically offensively. You have not shown the discipline, the clock management, any of the head coach stuff to say that you'd belong to be anything other than an offensive coordinator in this league.
In a division that has gotten good, too. The Eagles aren't going anywhere. Say what you will about the Cowboys. There's talent on that roster, and obviously these guys speak for itself. I just love the new Giants motto, Craig. I think this is really good. Hey, did you see what the Jets did today?
I mean, you could make an argument for most of the last 50 years that has been the Giants' motto, outside of like Joe Namath and one or two other stretches where like Curtis Martin was awesome. Michael Phillips with us, mostly talking Commanders, which sometimes includes making fun of the Giants, here on the Hoffman Show. All right, Michael, I'm going to give you the same pop quiz that I gave Anthony earlier. Are you ready for this?
Oh, boy, bring it on.
All right, Anthony, are you ready to see if Michael can get closer than you did on my pop quiz earlier during First and Ten?
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, Michael, on what percent of their snaps did the New York Giants blitz yesterday?
It had to have been more than half. You would never have known that by the results. So I do think it was more than half, though. They brought pressure a ton. Give me 55%.
Wow, Michael, you are clearly a more astute football observer than Anthony for sure. And frankly, for me, I would have not have guessed more than half based off of just the sheer lack of pressure. But Michael, you are very close to correct. In fact, it was 60% of their snaps yesterday.
Yeah. Ball to the offensive line for sure. That was the first one I gave out. With Cornelius Lucas out, the kid, Colvin, comes in and he's so good. I think it starts in the center with Biadasz. Biadasz has just been such a difference maker for these guys, putting them in the right position. And don't overlook the contribution the tight ends and the running backs have made as well, getting the chip blocks, buying that extra second when they need to. I take back everything I said about the offensive line all offseason. They're good. They're legitimately good.
How much of it do you think is like these are players that have played better this season versus the ability to separate out the play calling, the situation, and the fact that the quarterback does cover for a large amount of a large percentage of the small number of mistakes they are making?
I would love to know the answer to that, right? And that's one of the reasons we love football, is it's so hard to separate out what's the quarterback, what's the team, right? Quarterback win is, of course, the most useless stat in all of football for that reason. Offensive line wins would probably be about the same. I'd love for you to get somebody smart on your show instead of me and really untangle what is going on here. Sorry. I've identified Biadasz calls the protections really well, right? You pick up on that. I've identified that Jaden Daniels buys time when he needs to and processes at a really high level. And I do think very highly of this coaching staff, obviously, not just at the top level, but you go down to the position coaches. I think they're, Anthony Lynn obviously is very good at drawing up, these things as well. I don't know what's what. Whatever it is, though, is working exceptionally well.
Like, on some level, Michael, I actually think that they approach this, some of their problems, on like the simplicity level that fans do. And I mean that as a compliment, because I feel like some coaches, and we both cover them in our years of doing this, right? You were on the beat longer than I was, but I was on it long enough. It's like, oh, I got this thing, it should work. And it's like, I don't know, this guy over here seems to be the problem. What could you do? I don't know. We got to slide. We got to do this. We could do that. And it's like Cliff goes, I think we're going to chip that guy. Like, that edge is a problem. So let's put two guys on him. Hey, this corner, that guy's in the way of the play. That guy's killing our outside runs. So what if we put the receiver in motion and we figured out it was man-to-man and he just follows him and now he's not there anymore? Okay, cool. That seems like a solution. And, like, the simplicity of their solutions for this stuff, both from a pressure and a run game design. I circled one of the key plays yesterday, that RPO they ran to Jeremy McNichols with about 7.5 minutes to go, where they just run Diami in motion across the formation. And that little bit of threat of screen finally loosened up that Giants run defense, which had gotten pretty stout. They get an 8-yard gain, and all of a sudden they're off and running towards the field goal that puts them ahead for good. And so it's like these little details that it's just like, if you asked someone at the high school level to be like, hey, can you figure out a solution to this problem? Yeah, this. And you might not have to think, you know, sometimes you do have to think about second order problems. And I'm not saying football is always this simple, but sometimes it is. And coaches way overthink stuff. And I think that's the thing I appreciate about Cliff, is specifically in the staff that he's assembled, is they clearly see problems, which helps them clearly find solutions.
I agree with all that. And I think within that is, you know, he's not obsessed with keeping 11 guys viable on every play, right? You see so many guys, you know, all five skill players have to be the impact players or taking a guy out. He's not afraid to say, here's John Bates. John Bates' job is to buy the quarterback an extra half second. And I'm sure somebody in some meeting says, hang on, you just changed the math. Now it's 11 against 10, and we're at a disadvantage. And he just kind of shrugs his shoulders and says, they'll find Terry. They'll find Noah.
It doesn't matter if our quarterback is dead. Yeah. Like, order of operations here.
That's exactly it, right? None of this works if the quarterback doesn't make the play in the end, and the guys don't make the play in the end. But just that willingness to say, yeah, you know, we'll take a guy out of this play to buy our quarterback the extra half second. We think that's worth it on the back end, and it has been.
And by the way, the longest play I believe that they had yesterday, I'm just looking real quick. No, the Zacchaeus 42-yarder was longer. But the third longest play, Noah had a 31-yarder. When was Noah Brown's 31-yarder? I don't even remember that. Eckler's 28-yarder, which was on a 3rd and 9 in that same drive that I was just referencing. It happens on a play where Eckler chips. And then the Giants don't pick him up. They're in man-to-man, and it's like, oh, we thought he was a blocker. Nope, he releases late. And so even in those situations, they're getting big plays out of it, which you love to see. Michael Phillips, host of MP on the Mic, 10 a.m. to noon, 9:10 The Fan in Richmond, available every day on the free Odyssey app anywhere in the United States. He's with us here on the Hoffman Show for Not My Beat. Okay, the defense, Michael. In the first quarter yesterday, they gave up 115 yards rushing. That's bad. They didn't give up a whole lot the rest of the game. The Giants finished with 164. Do you look at that as a positive or a negative?
Probably negative overall, because they did transition into passing there. I don't know, you know, if that was a deliberate thing or not, but I felt like they didn't press their advantage in the second half as much as I would have perhaps after that. I do think the positive here is these guys are really good at in-game adjustments. And your fun stat of the day here, Craig, I'm not going to make you take a quiz on it. These guys have won the coin toss in 7 of their 9 games this season. That's luck. That's not skill, by the way. That's not the DQ effect. But they've deferred every time. And the result of that is they get a better possession to start the second half than they would have get to start the first half. Because these guys can process information in real time really, really well. And I think that's the positive I would take out of what is otherwise a negative stat.
That's a really interesting point about, like, you defer because you have the chance to double up, which they did in this game. They didn't use it. They went 3 and out on the opening drive. But the idea of we're going to have a better idea coming out of halftime, I think that's a really astute point. I don't know. Been kind of a talking point on the show today is I don't really mind the rushing total. Like, obviously I want them to not give up 10 yards and then 12 and then Jones on his own read for 24. Like, I'm not saying, hey, great job, guys. Nailed it. But I do think it's a strategic choice to just say, hey, New York, if you want to go on 16 play drives, be our guest. We don't think you can do it. Not more than once a game. And I think that overall, against most offenses in the NFL this year, that is a good bet to make. And so that is kind of the thing that I wonder about, is like, how viable is that against the best of the best? Is that actually a winning strategy, or is it a get to the playoffs because offenses for some reason are down in the NFL this year strategy?
Hey, we'll find out over the next few weeks, right? We're turning the page quickly into some top-notch competition. I thought the Bears were going to be top-notch competition. So, you know, I got more excited for that game than I had the right to, it turned out, because they're kind of a mess coming out of the bye. I don't know how that happens. You have a really good team, gets hot, goes into the bye, comes out of it worse than it was before. I mean, that's obviously a coaching thing, too, to a large extent. But you look at these next three, Steelers, Eagles, Cowboys, I'm ready to learn a lot about how this team will hang in the playoffs. And that, what a sentence to say, right? They're 7-2. They're going to make the playoffs, Craig. That's basically a foregone conclusion at this point. How are they going to hang against those top-tier teams? Well, you got two of them coming up, and the Cowboys always give you a tough test. I'm excited to do some learning here.
No, I think that's a good point as well. The Eagles all of a sudden playing a lot better, obviously. I also wonder, though, you talk about Chicago. We've heard about the 49ers flu a couple years ago. There's a Lions flu this year. I gotta look this up. Is there a Commanders flu that is happening? Like, think about how poorly Arizona played for a couple of weeks after they played Washington. The Bengals, I don't know, they figured some things out offensively. Cleveland was bad already. The Ravens then went and lost to the Browns. Maybe that was 2 weeks later. I don't know. I got to do the math. But I do think that there is something to the Commanders have, like, just broken a couple of teams. Like, Arizona's a fine football team. They stomped Arizona and, like, broke their soul. And I think that goes to the kind of team this is. And, yeah, they're under-talented, and I'll ask you more about the trade deadline in a second. But the reason they're 7-2 is because they get every ounce out of what they have, and they put it into other people in a physical way that is just, like, it has the lasting effects. At least that's what it feels like.
I agree with that. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you the Panthers are a good football team. They're a bad football team. But I haven't noticed a lot of teams beating them by 40, Craig. That's kind of unique to these guys, right? Even when they take care of business, they do it emphatically. They do it in a way that puts people on notice and die. That's part of the reason I'm excited for this Steelers game, because obviously the Steelers defense has done the exact same to people this year. I think this is the best defense in football. I think it's a Super Bowl caliber defense. On the other hand, I think these guys are playing a physical, tough style of football right now. It's a hard out for anybody, no matter how good you are. I think that makes this a fun matchup.
For sure. And, of course, by this time tomorrow, we will be past the trade deadline. However you want to answer this question, whether it's draft pick, whether it's caliber of player, whether it's whatever, how aggressive would you be? How aggressive do you anticipate Adam Peters being in the next 22 hours and change?
I think he's going to lay low. I really do. I think that as fun as this year is, and it's so much fun to say things like best record since 1996, pre-Snyder. That's incredible. Like, it's a fun year. It's not a championship year. I keep coming back to this. This is a really good team, by the way. They can hang with pretty much anybody. This is not. You watch the Lions play. You watch that Ravens game. You watch the Chiefs play. There's another gear, another level that these guys aren't quite at yet. And that's not to say they can't get there. I think they can get there really quickly. That's to say, I'm hanging on, and I'm saving all my resources, all my money, all my draft picks to really go after this thing in the next 2 years when you've got a healthy Jaden Daniels. Guys want to be here. You're going to run the free agent market this offseason. I would not jeopardize that to bring in short-term help unless it's a very favorable deal.
See, that's the thing, though, is I kind of look at this as the start of free agency. And this is kind of a new trend in the NFL that I think is smart, or at least one that's coming up a little bit more. And the Bears were in a very unique situation to take advantage of this last year because they didn't care as much about their draft pick last year because they had Carolina's pick, which turned out to be the number one pick in their franchise quarterback in Caleb Williams. But the Patriots, there's talk that they might be buyers this year because it's going to be easier to acquire a player now and re-sign them than have to fight with a team in free agency in getting a bidding war, or, you know, you got a guy that's been franchise tagged and you got to give up a ton of draft capital. I kind of look at this as an opportunity to build for the future, but also build for right now. Like, you get an extra half season out of a guy, plus you get him for the future. I'm not really interested in rentals, but I am interested in young players that I may sign otherwise next year in free agency and just have to give up an extra sixth rounder to acquire right now.
I think that's a really smart point. If you can do a deal like that that comes with a long-term, a Montez Sweat-style deal, I kind of like that. I also say Adam Peters loves his draft picks, and these guys have the salary cap space to do one of those trade and dump deals where they eat somebody's salary. I'd be curious, generally hear about bad teams doing that. This is the rare good team that's positioned to do that if they wanted to.
That's a good point. The thing is, I just don't know who those players are. And the fact that dudes are dropping like flies around the league. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are coming in here on Sunday, could have any of like three or four wide receivers that have been rumored to be linked to them. They almost got Ayuk. It falls apart. He resigns at San Francisco. Now he's hurt. But, you know, obviously they were in on Devontae. Now they apparently had a deal done for Christian Kirk, basically. And then he gets hurt, breaks his collarbone, out for the season. And now there is still in the wide receiver market. So with Denzel Ward going down and all these dudes around the league just dropping like flies, the available list just keeps shrinking and shrinking, which obviously makes the market more and more competitive. So could be a wild, wild couple of hours here. Mike will be on the air live for a couple of them tomorrow, 10 a.m. to noon on 910 The Fan. Of course, down in Richmond, if you happen to be driving through the area, you can also catch it on 105.1 FM. And you can catch it anywhere on the free Odyssey app. Michael, appreciate you as always, sir, and talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Talk to you then.
All right, that's Michael Phillips, everybody, with us here on the Hoffman Show. We get back a speedy edition of Around the NFL before Dave Johnson joins us live on set here at Capital One Arena ahead of the Wizards and Warriors tonight. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well. All right, let's quickly here go around the NFL because Dave Johnson, he's wrapping up talking to Brian Keefe right now, and then he is headed upstairs here at Capital One Arena. Well, he'll join me on set ahead of the Warriors and Wizards tonight. But Anthony, wacky day of NFL football yesterday. And by the way, my afternoon window looked like it was going to be a disaster picks-wise at one point, and then kind of got saved at the end. Dolphins and Bills. Buffalo wins on a field goal. Miami's offense really efficient in this game. Tua, I feel like, had a ridiculous box score. 25 of 28 for two touchdowns. He had three incompletions on the day, and they lost. Yikes. A 61-yard field goal for the Bills for the win. They maintain their spot atop the AFC East. This one we thought could be close, Anthony. How about the Ravens dump trucking the Broncos? Like, this is the difference between a team that has a good unit that can do it sometimes and a Baltimore team that is probably still the best in the NFL and decided to remind everybody yesterday.
Yeah, again, like, it was only going to be a matter of time, but also I think that was Denver's first real test defensively. And they just proved to be, you know, still young, still trying to develop, be on the up and up. And, yeah, the Ravens just went out there and handled business.
I mean, Bo Nix, 19 of 33, no touchdowns, a pick in the game. And Denver struggled a little bit on the ground as well. I mean, they ran 64 plays. Nix dropped back. They dropped back. There was a trick pass in there. 34 times, ran it 30, but just couldn't get anywhere with it. Meanwhile, Lamar, 16 for 19, 283 touchdowns. Henry, 23, 106. Two touchdowns. So much for the Denver defense being the best in football. Whoopsie daisies.
That was his fourth time having a perfect passer rating. Apparently that's tied for the most.
That's ever. Crazy. He was the MVP last year. He's probably going to win it this year unless people get bored because he's having a better season. Chargers, so much for the Browns being good. 27-10. That's your final score there. Herbert, 18 for 27. Two touchdowns, 282 through the air. J.K. Dobbins, another two on the ground. Meanwhile, Jameis Winston, 26 of 46. Three picks for J-Mo. Whoopsie daisies.
Yeah, I was waiting for Nick Chubb to get going, and he still hasn't gotten his feet wet.
No, it's like almost like coming off of one of the most devastating knee injuries we've ever seen might take some time.
Yeah.
And having an offensive line that's not nearly as good and a passing attack that is worthless isn't very helpful. We'll see how many Cleveland Browns who played in that game play their last game for the Cleveland Browns in that game. The New Orleans Saints. Yikes, bro. What I tell you on Friday, though, Saints were 7-point favorites in this game. And I was like, there is no reason the New Orleans Saints should be 7-point favorites over anyone, even the Carolina Panthers. And 7-plus point dogs have been absolutely awesome this year, winning straight up. And I was like, there's no good reason for doing this other than that. Let's just follow the trend. And Anthony, mark one up in the win column for your boy, because I told you the Panthers were going to win. They did, and that was Dennis Allen's last game. He got fired.
So you want to know what's crazy, Craig? So I wanted the Panthers to go out there and get this dub. This was a great opportunity. I was rooting for Bryce Young. I just didn't think it would be at all possible because the Panthers stink. But guess what? They went out there and showed me wrong. And Craig, you were there at the game.
I was not there at the game.
Oh, no. Did you?
I was on my couch. I did text you the words to the fight song, but I wasn't
I said, I was confused.
Okay. I was not actually there. I just texted you the words to the fight song. Nothing could be funner than to be in Carolina. The game wasn't actually in Carolina, but I was not there. Neither were my parents. They gave up their season tickets a long time ago. But alas, the Carolina Panthers now have the same record as the New Orleans Saints, even though the Saints won their first two games by a combined 64 points. They haven't won since. Raiders 24, Bengals 41. This was the last game as the play caller for the Las Vegas Raiders for Luke Getsy and many on the Raiders staff. Just think, Anthony, sliding doors moment of all of this season. The Raiders were not willing to go to a third year on Cliff Kingsbury's contract. He then came out of that contract negotiation, poked his head up for air. Dan Quinn was like, come on over here, pal. They got the deal done. Kingsbury's here. Antonio Pierce is now fired as offensive coordinator.
Yeah, that was a bonehead decision. But, you know, it starts with their owner and comes all the way down. And I'm glad we have Cliff Kingsbury over here.
We'll see who's Raiders going on to a bye. They don't know who their play caller or their quarterback is going to be coming out of it. Minshew, 10 of 17 in this game. Desmond Ridder came in. He went 11 for 16, threw a touchdown, but only averaged 4 yards an attempt. Yikes. Cowboys, they lose 27-21 to the Falcons, but the bigger story here is they lost their quarterback. Dak Prescott out, quote-unquote, several weeks, according to Adam Schefter and others, with a hamstring injury. So I have that as not ideal. Things going from bad to worst for Dallas, who, by the way, a couple years ago, you know, the old Cooper Rush joke that we have in the hour opener with Momo?
Yep.
Yeah. They used to have a run game, so Cooper Rush, and it was funny. Now, they have no run game. Their defense is going the wrong way. And Cooper Rush is going to play quarterback for them. Yikes, bro.
Yeah, Dallas, they're looking like a dumpster fire right now.
Yeah.
Sadly.
By the way, how well am I doing on the picks straight up?
You're 6-0.
That's what I thought. What a week. Patriots, Titans. The Patriots cover here thanks to Drake May running. Like, we really got the full Drake May experience in this one. And you got it from the last play of regulation into overtime. Last play of regulation runs around for literally a Jaden Daniels-esque amount of time. Now, Daniels, of course, threw a Hail Mary 60-whatever yards in the air. May just throws one like 20 yards as he's getting drilled. Just an incredible play to find Ramondre Stevenson for the game-tying touchdown. And then in overtime, they need a touchdown to win, and he just can't be patient enough. Throws a deep ball on a third down. Instead of trying to find something shorter. Actually, I don't even know if it's a third down. But kind of arm punts it. And that's it and that's all. Game-sealing interception as the Titans had already kicked a field goal on their opening possession. May probably felt rushed because that possession took like 7.5 minutes off the clock. Titans 20, Patriots 17. 7-0?
7-0, Craig.
Cardinals-Bears 29-9. Is the Commanders' flu real? Man, I will say, things are falling apart in Chicago.
Man.
Fast. Fast. Lose on a heartbreaking Hail Mary next week. You have your team captain and DJ Moore walk off in the middle of a play. If you have not seen this, Caleb is running for his life. Moore thinks the play is over and just walks off the field. Yikes. It winds up being incomplete to Keenan Allen on that play. Later in the game, the Bears are down bigly, and literally like the last play of the game, Matt Eberflus says we were trying to get some work in. What they got was Caleb's ankle rolled up on. He limps off the field. And by the way, this Bears defense that had not given up 21 points in 13 straight, thanks in part to the Commanders being inept in the red zone the week before, but 13 straight, gave up over 20 in the first half, including a run with 4 seconds to go of 52 yards for a touchdown. Kyler playing good ball right now, but the Bears are a disaster in the making.
Yeah, I couldn't believe the touchdown run at the end of the first half. You lose the last game, last play of the second half, and then this first half, you give up a long run. That That's a bad couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Bad couple
wacky,
of weeks.
Wacky game. Or wacky bits in Chicago. Wacky game in Philadelphia. Jags close late but can't ultimately get it done. 28-23, the final score. Jags got a cover for those that are counting. But the Eagles, Anthony, go up big in this game. They're up like 22-0. Jags get a score. Ensuing drive, it looks like Jalen Hurts is tripped, like legally tackled, right? Someone hits his feet. He then like loses his balance, falls into his offensive lineman. Or sorry, Saquon on a carry does this, not Hurts. Saquon gets his foot hit, steps on an offensive lineman as he stumbles, goes down, loses the ball as it hits the ground. Ground can cause a fumble as long as you were not contacted. The refs rule whatever contact happened in the backfield was incidental or inconsequential. Inconsequential is the word, not incidental. Inconsequential. And because of that, they rule it a fumble. The Jags picked it up, ran for a touchdown. All of a sudden, it's 22-16. Like that. Eagles come back, get another touchdown. Nick Sirianni, multiple failed two-point conversions. Jags get a couple, but ultimately 28-23 is the final score as the onside kick goes begging late. But I thought that was, look, I'm not looking to give the Eagles calls. It's been well documented. I hate that team. I hate the way they play offense. They annoy the hell out of me. That was a terrible, terrible call that did not rule Saquon down by contact. He got his foot hit, and then he went down. That is down by contact. That is literally what the words mean.
Yeah, bad call. But Eagles found a way to pull it out. I will say, Craig, the jump hurdle that Saquon had in the game.
Oh, thank you for bringing that up.
Oh,
yes.
My God. That
is that the single
freakish.
Greatest open field move by the – like, it's in the Hall of Fame, right? Like, Reggie Bush step back against Fresno, like, that is an all-timer.
Yep.
This goes – the reverse hurdle. What?
It was the reverse hurdle out of a spin move. So it was like he hit him with a three-piece combo, essentially, Craig. Like, he stuttered, spun, and then jump hurdle. It's crazy.
Some idiot kid in high school is going to try to do that, and he's going to go to the hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, that – kids, literally, do not try this at home or on the road or anywhere in your life. You cannot jump backwards over other human beings. You are not Saquon Barkley. Lions, 24. Packers, 14. Man, Jordan Love just doesn't look right. He's clearly not healthy. He's not playing good ball. Packers, like, they keep making games closer late, and you're like, where is this earlier in the game when the game is competitive? But ultimately, the Lions, just way too much. 17-point explosion in the second quarter. They continue to be the top seed and best team in the NFC. Rams went on absolutely wild one. Seahawks were up early. Geno couldn't stop throwing it to the other team. Rams ultimately went on a walk-off in overtime, 26-20, in a game where Puka Nacua punched a dude, got thrown out. That was a bad fantasy alert to get. Your wide receiver, Puka Nacua, no longer playing because he got ejected for punching a dude. Puka, no punching people.
Yeah, that was wild. Uncharacteristic. But I was still surprised the Rams were able to do what they did in the second half without him. Like, Matthew
Cooper
Stafford
Cup's
is nasty.
Still ridiculous.
Yeah, he is. Yes, he
Sean
is.
Sean McVay, still good at his job. Stafford, still good at his job. Kyren Williams, good at his job.
Mm-hmm.
Geno, forgot which team is employing him. Got to throw it to the guys that are wearing the same jersey as you, bro. Not good. Speaking of way too many turnovers, the Vikings-Colts game. What a weird one this was. Z had the turnover, the pick in the end zone. That's great. Love that for Zaire. But unfortunately, they couldn't get the ball in their own end zone. No catches by Colts in their own end zone in this one. Flacco, 16-27, 179, 14.6 QBR. That's bad. Jonathan Taylor, just 13 carries for 48 yards. After he had a couple nice ones early, but the Vikings really shut it down. Meanwhile, Darnold, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. Justin Jefferson also had a pass in this game on a 3rd and long to get them a conversion on what I believe was eventually a scoring drive. Jefferson, 9 targets, 7 catches, 137 in the game. That is how you get it done. And the Vikings are 6-2, sitting just behind the Commanders in the NFC. Anthony, I didn't go perfect, did I?
You got one game wrong.
Which was the Cardinals-Bears?
Yes, sir.
Sheesh.
You had a hell of a week, Craig.
I did well. I did all right against the spread. Tony's had two back-to-back double-digit wins against the spread.
That is intense. See, you two, I need to take notes, clearly.
What'd you do, Anthony?
I won 10-3, which
that's
is
a good week.
Respectable, you know. But 12-1, like, you already have – how many games are – you already have a two-game lead on me, so.
I make it four. We're both on the Chiefs tonight?
Yes, sir.
All right, Chiefs, Buccaneers, the final one tonight. And that is a 9-point spread as we sit right now ahead of KC and Tampa tonight. Oh, look who it is. Dave Johnson making his way to the table as we're live at Capital One Arena. We'll talk Wizards, Warriors before our pick 6 at 6 next on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live on YouTube where everybody look. It's Dave Johnson.
Yes, on YouTube. Streaming, yeah. You're all over the place. And again, your interviews that you put on YouTube, just fantastic.
Thanks, sir.
Someone we will, of course, give credit, but if you go to Wizards Radio 24/7 or WizardsRadio247.com, you can hear some of Craig Hoffman's interviews. That's where
there
you roll.
You can
find content everywhere.
That's where your home for the Wizards is 24/7. You just get Dave all the time. What more could anyone want in life? Fresh off the trip to Mexico City, where the rookies continue to play incredibly well, basically leading one of the three of them, Keyshawn George, Alex Saar, Bub Carrington, leading many of the NBA's categories amongst rookies. When you look at Keyshawn, though, what has impressed you the most about him? Because I think he's the surprise because he's the last of the three. It's very easy to be overlooked when you're the mid-20s pick compared to two lottery guys. What has impressed you so far about Keyshawn George?
Well, I think it speaks to what Brian Keefe and what we're going through right now is these players have the freedom and they feel it. And at one point, and I think it was Saturday night, although as I go through customs, I also lost my memory. Somehow I didn't check my memory. But at one point, you know, he was 2-for-9 shooting. What that tells me is he wasn't afraid to take 9 shots. And see, that's what people have to remember. And I think about, you know, and I'm getting off track here a little bit, but you think about Johnny Davis, what we're seeing him now, much more confidence, whereas in his rookie year, it's taken him longer. He was basically passing the ball before it even reached his hands, where the rookies, all of them, including Keyshawn George, look, his defense, he's relentless. He's coming up with steals. You know, this is an athletic league now. And so, you know, if you can have a George bring the ball up and Alex Saar bring the ball up, it's not the basketball that even we grew up with where that's the guy who's the point and he handles the ball and he shoots and he does this. That's not basketball now.
Yeah, it's the positional flexibility. And nice to talk about that with the Warriors in town tonight because they're, I don't want to say the team that invented it, but they're the team that has mastered it. You know, that prime of their dynasty was built on the fact that all five guys could do everything at all times. And by the way, you had two guys who could do one thing, put the ball in the basket, better than anyone else in the history of the league. But when you look at Saar, you've seen so many rookies come through here, so many great defensive players come through over the year, both home and away. What is it about the production is there in terms of shot blocking. What is it about the way he defends where you go, oh, that's different. That's how he's able to do it, or something that gives you maybe even hope beyond the numbers long term?
Well, some of those blocks were against some guy named Bam Adebayo. And he had 4 blocks on Saturday night. Obviously, the numbers, and he puts them in a category of rookies, including David Robinson and Shaquille O'Neal, most blocks to start their career. That's a pretty good category. Not bad to be put into. But it is how, you know, he uses his body and how he adapts, because he's got a body to use, quite frankly, in terms of the athleticism and length. But just having it doesn't mean you know how to use it. And I think about he got 2 fouls early. Yet he didn't foul out. And so that tells me that he's learning as the game is going on. This is his first time seeing a Bam Adebayo. So he's adjusting. He knows what Bam's doing. That's the other part of this entire rookie class is, yes, we always love to talk about before a draft. It's broken down, you know, all these terms, athleticism, length, da-da-da. But up here, that's the cerebral. And for those of us, I pointed to my head for the YouTube, but for
the radio audience,
I'm pointing to my head. It's that really is the difference of do you succeed or not succeed in the NBA? Because I'm redundant just saying how talented these guys are, how scouted they are. So they've got to be smart, and Alex Saar and all of them are showing that they've got that stuff like athleticism and toughness we like to talk about, but they have what we don't see, and that's the smarts.
You can go to any AAU tournament and see a lot of athletic kids.
Yep.
The ones that are going to eventually make it to the league, like that, it is the up here mental part of it. And I think Will and obviously Michael understand that. Their scouts that they have now understand that. And it's really cool to see that kind of coming through on the court. Dave Johnson, as if the voice doesn't just self-identify immediately with us here live from Capital One Arena here on the Hoffman Show. Again, tonight we have Maryland Hoops here on the Team 980. So Bloomberg 99.1 is where you will find Wizards and Warriors. Pregame 6:45, tip-off at 7:15. We're still awaiting word on whether Steph Curry is going to play. And it was funny, I was talking to my wife earlier today, and she goes, are you going to stay for the game? Sometimes I do the show here, and I get out pretty quick after, listening to you guys on the way home. You know, I might wind up texting you during the broadcast because I'm listening. But she goes, are you going to stay? And I go, yeah, I think I'm going to stay for a while at least tonight, because I frankly don't know how many more times, not that Steph is on the verge of retirement, we just don't know. Like, this is a guy that is still doing it at such a high level this late in his career. Do you have a favorite Steph Curry story that comes to mind, of whether it's a moment that you've gotten to call when he's facing the Wizards, or a story that you've heard just being around the league? Is there a favorite Steph story?
You know, I right away, one does not come to mind, only because to your point, we only play them twice a year.
Sure.
Thankfully. twice a year. Having said that, I think just the knowing, you know, Davidson like I do, because I'm getting off track here, but I covered college soccer in the 90s, and Davidson is not a basketball school. It's a great school. If you want to make a lot of money in life, go to Davidson, but not to play basketball
unless you're Steph Curry.
You'll be a chief executive somewhere, that's where we first discovered or first learned about or could realize what his potential was. So I just think it gets back to what we were just talking about. Why do people make it in the league? Is the fact that he's Del Curry's son help? Well, not so much the DNA as the smarts, as we're talking about. How do you produce like he produces on that consistent level, where the whole league has not been able to figure him out, unless you're smart? And that to me is why, you know, people are going to come tonight, quite frankly, wanting to see Steph, not knowing because. And that's why we don't know. Look, he's played three games, but he's not going to take 40 off and then pick up. He's going to pick up at some point. Maybe it'll be tonight. He was out there shooting around, from what I understand earlier today. He shot around yesterday. You know, is the theory, all right, let's get him a little bit of mileage on the road here. So it's possible he'll play tonight. But, you know, what scratches your head about the Warriors, they're dealing with an injury to Steph Curry. But Buddy Hield is leading, a guy named Buddy Hield who can score, is leading in scoring. And, you know, they're 5-1. So they're still getting it done. But it's, you know, what excites me is it's just like the other night against Miami. That was clearly a step up, with all due respect, from Atlanta.
Right.
The Wizards lost that game because they didn't make as many shots as Miami did. And that's no embarrassment in terms of losing 118-98. The Heat made their threes. The Wizards did not. But if you look at some of the numbers inside the game, it's what we wanted. The Wizards
especially
competing.
Especially the young guys. Yeah.
Especially the young guys. And our friend Chase Hughes tweeted out something, and he's great. Look at his advanced stats. The Wizards right now are fifth in the NBA in getting open threes. That's an impressive stat. Now, their percentage needs to be higher. They're only shooting 35% in getting open threes. But what it says is they're doing something right offensively and how they're working the ball around. Fifth in the NBA in getting open threes, in a league where you better get some open threes. Now you got to make some threes.
Right.
Make a few more on Saturday. It's a closer game.
It's funny because a stat like that could be looked at one of two ways. Either that's good offensive process, or it's like, maybe they're just continually finding the guy who's open for a reason. But the thing is, like, right now that guy is Alex Saar, but they're working on it so that eventually teams are going to go, oh, no, Alex Saar is open for three. And that is a multi-year process.
I think
the fact that he's continually taking them right now, like, he's not scared. To your point about Keyshawn George the other night, they're not afraid.
And they'll make threes. And they will. And they know. And the guy who never got going the other night, Corey Kispert, he will make threes.
Yeah.
So to your point, you're right. You know, does that mean the guy's open for a reason? No, these were guys that can make threes, and had they, it would have been I'm not saying a different result, but certainly a different scoreline.
Sure. And especially for a guy like Corey, who's one of the best in the league. All right. I know you just talked to Brian Keefe. If folks want to hear that, 6:45 is the pregame over on 99.1, Bloomberg 99.1, your home for the Wizards tonight. Of course, Team 980, typically your home for the Wizards, which is where we have Dave Johnson with us each and every game day. Dave, always a pleasure. Great to see you in person.
Well, and it's great to see you in person. We're going to get a better... I mean, not this is bad, this backdrop, but we're gonna
we did have a really nice like Wizards display behind us last time.
And, we'll get that. I'll get that sorted out.
Okay,
I'll get that sorted out.
When we get back to the football, it is our pick six at six next.
Did the Commanders win?
I heard they did.